Welcome to another episode of Systematic Geekology. This is a space where we seek to create and cultivate healthy conversations between those things we geek out on and the philosophical and theological questions that often arise out of our fandoms. Like, what does it mean to be human? What makes a hero? What makes a villain? How do the stories and narratives we geek out on shape how we live in the world? We are your priest to the geeks. We aren't all ordained, but we see ourselves as mediators at the intersection of geek culture and going deeper in our faith. We don't always have to agree, but we do respect each other, and we see everyone as a beloved child of God. Everyone geeks out on something, so come geek out with us and enjoy the show.
You're listening to an Anazal Ministries podcast.
Is it possible for war to change? We're going to be asking that question and more on today's episode of Systematic Geekology. We are the priests to the geeks as part of our primarily political series going into the world of Fallout this time around. I am your host, Christian Ashley, joined, of course, by the greatest. He who is blessed by Adam himself to deliver his will into the world. TJ Blackwell, how you doing, TJ?
Good, thank you.
Excellent. So, TJ, man, like, as we're going through this primary political series, of course, we continue to ask these questions, starting with, who is your favorite political figure from real life or fandom?
I'm pretty sure I said Teddy Roosevelt last time.
Yes.
I think that is still the right answer for me.
No number two selection for you?
I'm not very politically adroit. Most of the politicians I know about not because of policy, but because they're goofy.
Ah, I see.
Like Boris.
Yeah. Mm. This is my fourth time on this series as well, so I'm starting to run out of like my favorites. So I had to pull through, and I do remember the first time I watched the movie, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. Jefferson Smith in that movie is someone, obviously, it's a highly idealistic movie, but it's done so because, like, hey, that's how government should work. You should have good people like Jefferson Smith in there. He's someone I'd definitely vote for. So I pick him as my answer to this, even though I've picked three or four other ones at this point in time. So as well as all that, TJ, what have you been geeking out on?
Solo Leveling Warrior.
Mm.
Yeah.
The Warrior, is that a mobile game for the...
No.
The anime?
Well, I guess it's not called Solo... I'm pretty sure the full title is Solo Leveling Warrior. Either is way, it? I read the entire series.
Okay.
It's Solo Leveling, yeah. You're right. I read the first manhwa I read was Hardcore Leveling Warrior, so I mixed the two up. But yeah, okay. I read Solo Leveling.
That's easy.
I read all of it over a couple days. Fantastic.
Very nice. Yeah, we're probably going to have to do an episode on that one along the way too, because I've also read the entire webcomic. And as the anime is releasing right now, it's pretty good. There are better things out there in the world, but I still like it for what it is. Me, on the other hand, as of this recording, what dropped today, two new episodes for X-Men, the animated series on Disney Plus. It got me back into it. I was so ready for these, and they delivered and then some. Some great moments for everyone involved, like Magneto got to show off his chops too. Excellent episodes all. Have you had a chance to watch them yet?
No, I haven't. I was watching Solo Level. And also playing Valorant and doing laundry. Done a lot today.
A very busy day.
I went to Sonic.
So, further ado. Even better. With any further ado, we're going to get into Fallout. These games, I will put a caveat out here real quick. I have not played 1 or 2 or Tactics or Brotherhood of Steel. I will get into how we got into the series later on, but maybe you have, TJ. But anything involving those games, I know kind of the bare minimum of what happens, but nothing else. So we're going to focus on the other series, the politics involved with them. So, TJ, if you had to explain the franchise, how would you do so?
Okay. broadly, it is surviving in post-apocalypse. It's like the post-apocalypse game.
Yeah.
Franchise. But
simple enough.
Yeah, you're basically dropped into this world post-war. The nuclear bombs fell, wiped out pretty much everything. I think there are a few spots that weren't that ravaged, according to the lore, but obviously that's not where the games are, because that wouldn't be fun. And usually you have a mission, restore like water purifying machines, stuff like that. You basically thrust into the middle of a story in every game. You're kind of just thrust into the world that has existed, and you're coming out of a vault as, you know, a pre-war person into this post-war world.
It's kind of the basic gist being in the year 2077, a war was going on between America and China that got to the point where it became nuclear, and both sides got immensely devastated. Most games take place either like 100 years or 200 years post the bombs. So there's been some time for some of the radiation to go away, but this is not really using real world science and physics. This is based on your 50s sci-fi kind of expectations for how things would go in a nuclear apocalypse. It's a ton of fun. There's so many ways you could play it. You can play on the West Coast. You can play on the East Coast. There's a lot to be, you know, to delve into here. We should probably do episodes on the other games that we played too, but this is more of an overview of the series and its politics. So we're not going to focus too specifically on one game, but what was your introduction to the series, TJ?
So, technically, it's Tactics, but not really. I played Fallout Tactics at a friend's house in, like, sixth grade for, like, 10 minutes, and we did something else. I didn't even realize that it was Fallout Tactics until years later. So, really, it was Fallout New Vegas.
Yeah. Would you really count that one as, and like, if you were being super strict, sure, but like, you didn't really play the game that much. So I get it. Yeah. I got into it in college. Host of the show, John Eardley, and I were roommates at the time, and he showed me his copy of Fallout 3, played it, and was looking stuff up online and found out that the way they ended the original game meant that you had to sacrifice yourself in a stupid, senseless way. So I went out and I bought the DLC for it so I could, you know, play Broken Steel, and have been in love with the franchise ever since. So I've played 3, New Vegas, 4, and even for a very unfortunate time, I played a little bit of 76. But that's its own thing. So moving on from there, do we have a favorite in the franchise?
New Vegas.
And why so?
It's the best. I think it was my first, so there is some bias, but I think New Vegas captures just the triumphant of the human spirit so well. New Vegas as a world feels the most alive to me. New Vegas even is the silliest to me. It feels the best to play. I know that's wrong. I know that's not true. That is bias. But it just feels natural to me to play it. You get silly, you get goofy, the writing is really funny, the world is really fun to be in, and scary. There's just so much to do, and the DLC is, as a, like, you combine them, if you consider the game as a whole, it is by far the best DLC for any game I've ever played. Which, to be fair, also on that list is Fallout 3.
Yeah.
For me, at least.
Yeah, they normally do some good work overall in the series, but the DLC on all the games, pretty well done. I'll agree, New Vegas is the best. I mean, there's really no other way around it. It feels more like a Fallout game than the other two. Not to say that they don't feel like it, but there's that. It helps that it was written on the, you know, Obsidian side of things with, you know, more connections to the original games and playing with the certain facts. Hey, you can be wacky, goofy, but at the same time super serious in the same game, and it doesn't feel off. It doesn't feel wrong for that to happen. I think they pull that off immensely well in New Vegas. The factions and the gray and gray morality that you have to deal with, I think, is at its finest in New Vegas as well. navigating, do I go independent? Do I go with House? Do I go with the NCR? Or if you want to be really evil, do you want to go with Caesar's Legion? There's tons of possibilities to be done this, and there's so much that if you just play it through at one time, you're not going to get everything. You need to do it multiple times over. So yeah, New Vegas is the one for me too.
It's just really fantastic. You don't even have to play the game to play the game. If you just want to gamble, that you can do that.
Yeah.
It's great, and it feels real. It feels like a lived-in world, as long as you're not, like, cheating. Or, like, save scumming in your blackjack hand.
Which people do.
Yeah.
But moving on from there to our topics proper. One of the opening lines for some of the games, or something repeated very early on, is kind of an opening theme of the games, is that war never changes. And you'll hear that repeated oftentimes. It could be in a news broadcast. It could be in the narrator saying it themselves. Like, how true do you feel that this saying is?
Okay, so if you want to talk about, like, macro versus micro, on the micro level, war changes constantly. But war as a concept, I think there's some credence there. I don't think war, broad strokes, changes very much at all. You know, it's being fought for the same reasons, the same goals, and it's, you know, a cycle. War at its core doesn't change. People die, and usually not that much gets achieved.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. It's that idea, the macro idea, I'm glad you put it in that perspective, of war as a whole has not changed throughout the entire history of humanity. You could always argue there might be a good guy or a bad guy involved, or you could just say it's over territory or economic supremacy, or you're the wrong religion or what have you, or you're trying to control this sphere of influence that we really want. War doesn't change. Humans are humans. It's going to keep happening as long as we're on this earth in this form. But the subtleties, the micro ways of engaging in war are how war does change. And the fact that we're now in a more modern age where we have a drone that can kill someone from afar, from someone operating it miles away, that it doesn't have to physically interact with the battles being fought. You just press a button and people end up dying in the ways that, biological warfare has always been a thing, but then World War I really, and chemical warfare really changed how things were going in that direction. So and the idea being is that war doesn't change because war has always kind of been a thing, as long as there have been multiple people fighting over land or what have you. Sure. But how it's conducted has definitely changed.
Yeah. 400 years ago, a javelin was just a short spear. Now a javelin is a guidance system rocket launcher. So,
yeah.
Small strokes.
And yeah. I brought this quote up here because one of the things New Vegas does bring up is that, hey, you know, war never changes, but men do through the roads they walk. Yeah, war as a concept may not change, but how we as people approach it shows who we really are, shows how we can develop through it. So I like that they did that.
Yeah. Yeah, and we see it. And we also see men who don't change.
Yes, and they remain part of the problem.
Mm-hmm. And men who do change and cause some more problems.
Yes. Caesar being a good example of that, as someone who worked as an acolyte of the followers of the apocalypse, whose goal was to, you know, bring aid and medicine and knowledge to people, and then decided, well, this whole wasteland thing could really use a centralized leader, and I'm going to make that me, and then I'm going to use Rome, you know, recycle that from the past as my idea to take over this part of the world and have everyone under the banner of Caesar's Legion.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, like Joshua Graham, who was dedicated to Caesar and then kind of went off and ended up in, I can't remember the name of the place now, but
the tribes were the Sorrows and Dead Horses, White Horses, something like that. I can't remember. Was it Zion?
Yes, I think so.
Canyon, something like
that. You basically went took Caesar's idea and was like, well, I'm going to lead these people to live a life that they'll enjoy. But boy, am I going to kill the other tribe.
And that speaks a lot, too, to the whole concept of war never changes. Yet he's fighting a different kind of war than he did while he was a member of Caesar's Legion. He's, in a way, trying to protect this tribe. But his way of doing so is one of the things that's brought up against him, Joshua Graham, in that sense. You know, the Burning Man himself is like, is it appropriate to teach this group of tribals here how to engage in war if it means protecting their way of life? And is he just too drawn in by revenge to be objective in any way, shape, or form?
Yeah.
Now, Honest Hearts, another great DLC amongst a lot of really good DLC.
That's also good.
So, oh, yes. So, moving on from there, as mentioned previously, a large part of the backstory is the Great War, or the Sino-American War, depending on who's talking about it, which was fought against by the communist government of China and the increasingly more fascist America. A way of interpreting that is that at this point in time, America has annexed Canada within the game started. Well, the war starts. Ends officially in 2077, about 10 years earlier, we annexed Canada compared to what we would do right now. So just get an idea of where we're at politically in the games. So how well do you think that this whole thing plays into the games, into its themes, in your opinion?
I feel like some of the games, not at all. Mm-hmm. I feel like it was a lot. I didn't play one or two. I've heard people talk about them a lot, watched a few videos on them, but I haven't sat down and dedicated the time to them because I know I will probably just give up just because I've never really liked isometric games that much.
I agree.
Yeah. But I feel like it was a bigger part of 1 and 2 in tactics. And then at 3, it became less significant, but it's still definitely there. And compared to New Vegas and 4, and I don't know about 76 because I will not be playing it. They don't really bring it up except in like history books that you find and random people who are like, you know, just bring up the war as a whole.
In the newer games, it's a little more not subtle, but not as focused on compared to, as I understand, how the earlier games went. I'm the same way. I can't do that whole isometric game. It's not that they're inferior quality games in that regard. It's just not attractive to me. You give me a Western style RPG or just give me an RPG. Yeah, I'm in there. I'm in it to win it. But we do see in 3, in New Vegas and 4, some aspects of that war being left behind. We have this whole, you know, what's what I'm looking for here? It's anti being so free with information because you got to stay secret because the enemy, all it takes is just one slip up and, you know, it'll sink the entire operation. You have all these different military aspects being brought into civilian companies because they sense opportunity, they sense money. So you have, you know, you have Repcon, you have a couple of the other ones out there, even House's company as well got into looking into stuff so that they could, you know, make a buck off of this war. And their war profiteering since. You have in 3, there are Chinese imperial remnants left behind. You can fight every now and then. You see their Chinese assault rifles on certain places, showing that they had a spy network in place in America and descendants who 200 years after the fact are still there. And in 4, you actually have a Chinese submarine out in the waters of Boston, who with a ghoul captain, a ghoul, by the way, for people who don't know, are people who are affected by radiation so much they're essentially immortal, but they look like their flesh is being eaten away. They probably lost their hair. They kind of look like zombies. They call them ghouls in the series.
Live action.
So
Deadpool.
It's there, but it's just not as focused on. Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Yeah. In 3, though, they get Operation Anchorage.
Yes.
Which lets you like participate in the war.
This whole thing, that's why I brought the image up there. Basically, this is propaganda within the midst of propaganda. In the war, China actually took over parts of Alaska, forcing America to fight back against them. That's where you play through Operation Anchorage, where you're in the kind of a hollow deck kind of situation, replaying that history, seeing the actual invasion from the American side of things.
Yeah. Yeah. Another good DLC.
Yes.
I don't think any of the Fallout, the 3D Fallout DLCs are bad.
No. I mean, obviously, I think New Vegas does theirs way better, but there's no reason not to get the DLC for 3.
Mm-hmm. Or 4.
Okay. So, moving on. Even one of the things we kind of see is like how people look at America post this whole time, because there is no United States of America anymore. You have the enclave out there who are kind of like the descendants of the U.S. government, who are saying that they're the legitimate government, that they start off in Fallout 2, I think. Yeah, Fallout 2, proclaiming they're going to take over the United States again. Then in 3, they try to take over the water purifying project your dad is running. In 4, you see some remnants left behind of them who are older and about to die, that you can choose to get involved with the battle over Hoover Dam there. And in 4, they're not really there. They've kind of been wiped out for the most part in 3. And in 76, they do show up, but my memories are foggy of that, and I really wish I could forget playing it at all, to be perfectly honest. So we see as part of this process that even hundreds of years after the bombs fall, some people regard America with high esteem, but in very different ways. Some use it as a symbol of what they need to work to rebuild, while others are using patriotism for their own ends. So with all that in mind, do you feel like there's a difference between patriotism and fanaticism?
Yes.
How so?
There's levels to it. You can be patriotic and acknowledge that there are issues with your country that need to be addressed, but still believe in your country and what it stands for. When you're fanatic or nationalist about it, things are a little different.
I'll agree with that. The character portrayed there on screen, if you're watching this on YouTube, is Ulysses. He is quite well known amongst the fandom as someone who's kind of speaking for one of the main writers into how he kind of feels about Fallout. But at certain parts, there are some things distinct from the author himself, the writer, in that he carries the symbol of the American flag on his person as like an ideal of what the world should kind of go after, should try and change and become a United States in certain respects again. And if I ever misattribute his philosophy, well, guess what? It's kind of hard to peg down exactly what he thinks, even though all he does is talk at you for the most part.
Hello, friends. Are you enjoying what you're hearing from Systematic Ecology today in your earbuds, or whether it's on YouTube, or whether you're in traffic, or whether you're at work? Well, there's another way that you can stay engaged with us at Systematic Ecology, and that's on our Instagram account. Yes, hop over to Instagram, follow. We'll follow back, we promise. We post lots of fun stuff over there, whether they're updates on new podcasts that are coming out or getting ready to come out, or whether they're memes, or we're sharing what other of our friends are up to out in the world. Sometimes we go live at events, whether we're at a Comic-Con or whether we are just hanging out with friends on the back porch grilling out. You can follow us there. We also have videos and reels, like what's in Will's pull box from his local comic book store. He shares what he's reading in the world of comics. And then Christian is going to do some reviews of Spider-Man comics called Spidey Swing Bys. That's going to be fun. And then there's non-canon stuff. Non-canon? What? Yeah, Joshua's going to be reviewing one intellectual property from outside of the canon of his favorite fandoms, or a piece of literature that's a part of the biblical extra-canonical material. Man, that sounds like fun. But yeah, Instagram is one of my favorite social media outlets, and I love to engage with friends and family over there. And so we hope that you can engage with us there.
But there are other, like I said, the Enclave is there as well. Then you have other groups kind of reaching out. You have the NCR. They're trying to like kind of create a proto-America again. And they take certain things too far. They take certain things really well. It's showing a really flawed system because, hey, look, democracy is a flawed system. As beautiful as it is, as much as it does work, there are some issues that need to be taken care of. There is no such perfect system in the world, but I'm going to take ours. So in regards to patriotism versus fanaticism, I agree. There is a place to be very happy about the country that you live in, what it has done for the world, it is so good that we live in a country that we do, that we can even have a dissenting opinion on that. And then no one's going to get carted away to a re-education camp or something like that. That's a beautiful thing. But there are plenty of flaws in the system. You have systemic racism running throughout the history of the United States. You have illegal experiments done on certain members of the population. You have wars being fought in countries where a lot of the arguments would be made, hey, we never should have been there. And we're just trying to protect our own, you know, financial and economic interests instead of caring about the people involved in the midst of these civil wars or these coups or what have you. So there's room to say, yeah, I believe in the United States of America. I still think the United States of America is the greatest country in the world. But it's also a heavily flawed country with politicians looking out for themselves, with people who believe in this American idealism, you know, just stand up, be your own man and stuff like that, and then disregard other people who don't have the same opportunities as you. So how do I handle those two? How do I juggle them? But at the end of the day, you know, America is just a country. It's only been here for less than 300 years. Who knows if it's going to last any longer than that? Countries rise, countries fall, but God remains the same. So my ultimate authority is looking to him, but he also blessed me to be in this nation, so I need to look after where he's put me.
Yeah. It's just an easy trap to fall into.
Oh, very much so. And I say that as someone who was a very jingoistic person as a younger man, who would look aside things that the United States has done. Well, it's right if we do it, because we're the good guys, versus having a more nuanced take on things and like, hey, praise the good, disparage the evil. You can do both.
You can do both.
All right. So as mentioned earlier, Fallout does take a lot of inspiration from the 50s, like in its politics and its themes and the way certain images are drawn, as well as how scientific advancements are handled through the as seen through the eyes of a lot of the sci-fi movies going at the time or the comic books of the time, in a way that radiation is handled, you know, instead of the real world where, you know, like I mentioned on Friday Night Frights when Joe and I were there, radiation should give you cancer, not superpowers. Instead, in this, it will change you immensely and change the animals around to where they will gain superpowers. You will gain superpowers to some extent, depending on your whether you've been infected with the FEV virus or all that mess as well. So what can we learn from the way this gets played with in a series of, you know, this 50s aesthetic?
Well, we probably should not have a nuclear winter. And if we do prepare for one, we should be very careful about who builds our bunkers.
Yeah, I'm kicking myself right now that you mentioned that. I should have added a question about the vaults, because one of the huge parts of this is that there was a company, Vault Tech, that came around and said, hey, nuclear war is on the horizon. You better be prepared. You better be living underground in these safe places, safe, quote unquote, where we're going to put you there and you'll be safe from the radiation and the bombs, and you'll just live there in luxury and peace. And you're going to have all the food and water you'll ever need. And sometimes that was even correct. They would have control vaults where nothing would go wrong. But for the most part, them working alongside with the Enclave created certain scenarios to where, hey, we're going to put this secret little noise out throughout the entire vault that's going to mess with all these musicians we put in it. And then you're going to have, hey, we're going to breed a bunch of super soldiers in various ways. You get the super mutants being created by the FEV. You get in Fallout 4, you get the gunners are more than likely a bunch of jacked up superhumans hit with a bunch of drugs in that one vault. I can't remember off the top of my head. And you get other ones like in Fallout New Vegas, you get the boomers because they put a bunch of guns and explosives in one vault and they were curious to see what would happen.
Yeah. And my personal favorite, the one that was just one guy, but they cloned him.
And all the women. Yeah. Oh, Gary. Oh, yeah. Gary. That's a different one. Yeah. Vault 108. Gary.
Yeah. Classic.
Gary. Never has that name been scarier.
No. But they would do literally everything. Anything they could think
of. Yeah. And that's based off of like this idea of, hey, a 50s, you just trusted the government. You trusted what they said. And if an organization comes around like Vault-Tec and says, hey, we're working alongside them for your sake to put you in safety, so that you better be signing up for those vaults right now because it's your duty as an American citizen to be prepared. Well, people just believe that. Because, not to say that there wasn't any dissent against the government in the Fallout universe before, we do see plenty of cases of that, and that people were fighting against it, were trying to change things from within, some people a bit more violently than others. But the vast majority of the populace enjoyed the wealth that was spread around, enjoyed just being who they were, and didn't care about the downtrodden, didn't care about anyone who was outside of what was seen as regular. And the games do use that as a great way to show, hey, we had this nostalgia about the 50s, and yeah, there are certain things to be nostalgic about. We were in an economic boom. We were seeing families being created, a boom in a population of people with the whole new chances of possibilities and scientific advancement, and allowing the United States to become a superpower in the world, to protect the world, to make sure things didn't happen. We didn't have a third world war, to fight against the oppression sent out by communist Russia and communist China, and so on and so forth. Those are good things. But there's plenty of things underneath the surface. Racial discrimination, sexism, way more things than that, of people who didn't fit the bill of how you were supposed to just fit in. And Fallout plays with that too. So the same things happen. It just happened to be the year 2077 when these things were going on.
Yeah. So you got about 45 years, Canada.
We're coming for you.
That annexation is on its way. No, I would choose Mexico first, but
okay, that's part of your Grand Imperial designs.
Yeah,
it's part of your campaign slogan,
the Imperium of the East.
Mexico first, Canada second.
Yep.
Okay.
Now that's world power.
But what do you feel about the 50s science and the way they take things there?
I love it. I love it. A lot of things were predicted back in the 50s and 60s and 70s that would eventually be true, just not really the way it was thought of. And I love seeing them play out, or, you know, their ideas in Fallout. And it's just kind of novelty, like vacuum tubes remaining prominent. I love it. I love the aesthetic so much. That kind of like 50s, everything is bright, bubbly. I just love the way it looks. Nuclear cars, which is just not feasible yet. I do feel like that might still happen. Thorium. But I'm a big fan. I love it. I love seeing it. I love the artwork. For a long time, in my head was just constantly like steampunk, vacuum tube, like ancient sci-fi. I'm a big fan.
Someone who really loves 50 sci-fi movies, 60 sci-fi movies, there's this pleasant kind of innocence in them of how they approach science, about a bunch of screenwriters who knew nothing about how science works, or, you know, nothing about anything else, just so they could tell a story about these aliens invading, or, oh no, there's too much radiation means we're going to have Godzilla, or the giant Gila monster, or what have you. It's so fun to see how that played out. It's like, yeah, I know from a scientific standpoint, we're not going to have giant ants that breathe fire because of radiation. More than likely.
Yeah. Maybe not because of radiation. You know.
Yeah.
I'm not going to rule them out completely yet.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, we'll see.
I know that there's probably never going to be a death claw in the world, and we're better off for that. Or giant rad scorpions, or super mutants, or ghouls, because that's not how the body handles radiation. But it's cool to see on the screen. Imagine if that's how, you know, physics and chemistry and biology actually worked in another realm, in another reality out there. The rules were different. Yeah, I want to see that, how that plays out.
Yeah, I love it. And it's, you know, some of them are a little bit more realistic than others. I do think the government might try to make a death claw if they decide it's profitable. Death claws, Night Stalkers, Cazadores, all of them. They might deploy them all. But I doubt they will.
I wouldn't be surprised if someone hadn't been looking up something like that before.
Yeah. But, you know, those things are very difficult. if possible. Okay. And not feasible. So we get to see it in Fallout.
Yep. Another thing that we see is this basic idea of what it means to, how do you rebuild the world after facing a huge catastrophic threat, an event like a nuclear war, nuclear winter? And there's various ways it plays out in the games. Like, how do you see that in these games?
It is one of my favorite parts of the games as a whole. The communities that spring up, I love. I love so yes. much. Megaton, Tenpenny Tower, Diamond City, Good Springs, New Vegas. It just goes on. It's always, you know, the different little communities get together and eke their lives out the way that they see fit, whatever way they can. And you just kind of cling to the one that aligns the most with what how you would like to live if you have the choice, which most people do, or they're afraid mm-hmm. of leaving what they were born into. I love it. It's so fun. It's so interesting to see what different people come up with. We're going to talk about Diamond City later, so I won't. But like Tenpenny Tower is just a high rise, you know, a nice big hotel that happened to survive. And so a bunch of people moved in, formed a community. Some other things happened as well later after we got there.
Yes.
Megaton, they just decided to live around a bomb that fell and didn't activate. Sure. Whatever, dude. I love it. It's great. And yeah. They form a church around it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Church of Adam, they're a wacky group that could easily become a huge threat in the Wasteland, and in fact do in certain games. Yeah, I agree. It's one of the good things about Fallout is that it could be easily, if you just look at surface level, it's a very depressing game in that, yeah, a lot of humanity has been wiped out. America doesn't really have contact with the rest of the world. We don't know what things are like in Europe or Central and South America or Asia or what have you. But we do know that humanity survived and that humanity fought to continue existing. And I think Fallout does speak a lot to the ingenuity and the hope in humanity to continue pressing on in the face of overwhelming odds. Like coming back from a nuclear war is next to impossible, but they did it anyways. They found ways to remove radiation from stuff. They found ways to adapt to a world that has changed beyond, that it's never going to be the same way again. No matter how much technology evolves, no matter how much we reconnect with other people and other people groups along the way, it's so much fun seeing how other people look at their situation and whether or not they despair, whether or not they just kind of become jaded, or whether they become people like Moira Brown, who, if you're on YouTube, I had the image of her up there, and like her quote of like, hey, you ask her at one point in time as part of her quest, as part of her seeking out knowledge and how to do things, like, well, why does she care when the world is as broken as it is? And she just brings up, did you ever try to put a broken piece of glass back together? Even if the pieces fit, you can't make it whole again the way it was. But she does it anyway, because it meant something. The world means something before all of this happened. Was it a perfect world? Absolutely not. We've discussed why. But there are parts of it that are worth fighting for. And Fallout, ultimately, at the end of the day, isn't some depressive, well, we're all going to do it again and blow everyone up and no one's going to survive. It's like, yeah, there's a hope out there. There's a chance to be better. Go ahead. I see you have a dissenting opinion.
That one time we did do that from 10 minutes.
That was for hope. Yes. Well, that's if you went on the evil playthrough and blew up Megaton.
Yeah.
Oh, imagine that. TJ blew up Megaton.
Yeah. You got to. You have to finish the game. You have to see everything.
Which I do find it funny. Even if that does happen, Moira survives as a ghoul. So you can still have the Wasteland Survival Guide quest.
It's canon. That's the canon way you play through Fallout 3 is by blowing up Megaton, because Moira comes back in Fallout 4.
Does she?
Yeah, as a ghoul.
The Wasteland book does. No, she's not in Fallout 4.
She is.
Where?
Hold on. Keep talking.
No. There's no way, because the only person who really comes back from Fallout 3 into Fallout 4 are Madison Lee, Arthur Maxson, but as an adult, MacReady as an adult, and I think I'm definitely forgetting someone, but I would know if she was in these games.
Okay.
You sure that's not
Moira?
Yeah, that's what I thought. That's definitely not the canon. You just want it to be. You despicable man.
Negaton was a dumb city. I love it, though. I love the design. I love the layout. I love a good tiered city.
Oh, yes.
We don't get that here. Our country's too big.
Now, in contrast to some of those ideas, one of the things that are kind of brought up, instead of looking back at the past, especially in New Vegas and the Dead Money DLC, we see this call to let go of the past and move on to the future. So how do you feel as this occurs in the games, and what can we learn from that ideal?
I think Fallout New Vegas particularly, and especially Dead Money, show this really, really well. Because if you're not a little gremlin, of course, the game makes you deal with that same choice of you have to let it go to live. Mm-hmm. You have to be able to move past this, or you can sneak out of there with like 36 bars of gold and never have to do anything really for caps ever again.
Yeah.
Which is, I do that every time because
of course
I can't turn that down. But it is really effective at teaching the lesson to someone who isn't willing to go through the struggle of doing that, because it is not easy. There's like one specific way to do it, and you also have to play through Dead Money, which a lot of people don't want to do or aren't able to do well enough to make it out with the gold. I love Dead Money. I think it's the best one. Best DLC in New Vegas.
Mm.
A lot of people hate it. It feels, without forcing survival mode onto yourself, which is clunky and not very well fleshed out, Dead Money feels like a survival game.
Yeah, you start off stripped of all your supplies with a bomb around your neck. If you go into certain locations, it's going to blow up. You only have a certain amount of food, a certain amount of ammo, a certain amount of possibilities to get out of this alive.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if you play the wrong way, you're going to die.
A lot. But it does also show us that message through the antagonist, Father Elijah, who is someone before Dead Money that we already knew about and was already talked about, kind of a big wig of the Brotherhood of Steel. But he faces his demise because he cannot let go. He can't let go of what he was able to do, his power, and he tries to use the technology in the casino and Dead Money to reinstate himself. And he dies for it.
Yep.
Unless he beats you.
That DLC overall, yes, is a really good way. Or you lock yourself inside the vault down there by not paying attention to things. It's that whole idea of, hey, living in the past, living and lingering in that anger or greed or whatever is affecting you is a poor way to live your life in the present. It's not saying that you don't think about the past. It's not saying that you don't, hey, justice should still be delivered. What it is saying is that if you remain there, you're not present, and not present in the present. And that's an evil not only to you, but the people around you. And it plays out excellently. Outside of using certain, not cheating, but messing with the fabric of the game and taking all that gold at once for yourself, are you going to leave with all that gold? It is an impossible feat unless you play the game against itself, which is kind of the point. You're supposed to leave behind some of that. You can't carry it all on your own.
Yes, you can.
It's too much. You've got to let go of the past and move forward to the future. Not forgetting the past, not pretending like it never happened, but learning from it so the same mistakes don't happen again. So you have someone like Dean Domino, who was an entertainer before the war, who was turned into a ghoul and is still hung up on the love triangle he was in with, what was her name, Vera?
Mm-hmm. Vera.
I think. a lounge singer there, and his inability to handle with that regret in one of the most violation of the common sense you're expecting in Fallout. If you use a speech check to talk him down, that is the worst possible thing you can do, even though literally every other time you do that, it's good. Because you use it over him and he can't live that down. He can't let someone else take control of his life again. So he ends up turning against you if you do that. And it just shows how it corrupts you. Letting those things affect you to the point where this ends up a reality is just horrible. But there are plenty of people who live like that in the world.
Yeah.
Who become leaders in the world and allow that to affect them. Go ahead.
It's really... I think Dead Money does do it the best, but it's also kind of the theme of every DLC in New Vegas, except Old World Blues. But even in Old World Blues, it is kind of like, you're stuck in the past. But all of them, it's just, you see people suffering because they can't let go of their past, or your past. Man, it's really exciting.
For the last one, we have Ulysses. He can't let go of the past as his time as a courier, and his time in the Legion, and a time that you accidentally blew up a town because you delivered something to it that you had no idea this was going to happen. And he can't imagine a world where something like that just, there has to be a reason for why that happened. It couldn't just be coincidence. Something like, he can't imagine a world where things just happen sometimes. And yeah, sure, I'm someone who believes everything has a reason, but I also know I'm not going to be fit enough to see those things in my limited human state that I'm in right now. But he can't let go of that idea. Old World Blues, we have all the scientists there who have uploaded their consciousness elsewhere because they can't think of a world where they don't exist. And they're out there making humanity better when this whole time all they've been doing is making things worse by bringing the technologies that they do into the world. Mm-hmm. Honest thoughts, we talk about Joshua Graham. He can't imagine a world where he doesn't get revenge against Caesar or Caesar, which is the actual correct Latin pronunciation, but I'm going to flip-flop between the two. And for Fallout 4, we have our main protag here who has that idea. He wants to live with his wife and child, or either way, if you become, because you can switch between the two, you can either be the dad or the mom who becomes your main character, and you live without your spouse and your baby's been taken away from you. And how that kind of ties in with how you play the game. Do you seek after your son and try to figure out where he's at? Or do you make a new life for yourself in this whole brand new world? Like, how does that define you as a character?
Yeah, it's really, man.
Yeah. There's so much more we can go into depth here. Oh, go ahead, TJ.
I was just going to say they're great games.
Oh, absolutely. Like, we're not going to touch everything today. Like, so if you guys want us to do the other Fallout games that we have played, caveat there, more than happy to do so. So moving on from there, we have a bunch of different factions. This is just kind of some from Fallout 4. I couldn't find a photo with like every actual faction in the game, in these games. And they all have their different ideologies, but like, in your opinion, like, which one matches you the most with your ideals?
It's kind of hard to say because a lot of these are so particular to being post-war that that is the reason they don't exist currently. Like the Railroad and the Brotherhood of Steel and the Minutemen, even like Kaiser's Legion, the NCR. Almost all of them are specifically post-war, but I feel like ideologically I might be the closest to the NCR.
Okay. How so?
They're trying to reestablish democracy.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big part of it. They're pretty much the only one. Well, the Enclave, but
for a different kind of democracy.
Yeah, by default, I guess I'm in the Enclave because, you know, I'm American. But probably the NCR. They are trying to normalize. Yeah. I never picked the NCR's ending for New Vegas, except the one time that I needed to get the achievement. But
yeah, you did.
Yeah.
That's how I got the Caesar's Legion ending, too. Felt really bad, but I needed it for the achievement. It's not canon, I swear. So that's some good points raised there. I typically pick either the NCR or the Independent for New Vegas, depending on my mood at the time. Because, yeah, I agree. Like, they're really the only ones out there trying to bring some of what was good about America in this series to the wasteland. And one of the huge charges brought against him is they may end up just as bad as the original America too. So that's something that needs to change. And as someone who does like to reform things within the system first, I get that. That's probably what I would do in that scenario, but I don't know if they'd be my pick. Probably not. You know, the railroad, it's good for what it's done, for what it does. Yeah. Helping sense. I believe in that cause. I think they are sapient after a certain fashion. The followers of the apocalypse, I could almost see myself with them. And like, as someone who values knowledge and wants to spread it to the world and have other people understand things, I just don't agree with their ideology. I think they're too small-minded for their own good and too rigid for their own good. So I couldn't be a member. I could be a member of the Brotherhood of Steel if it's specifically the Fallout 3 Elder Lions version, in that we're here to do some good in the world. We're here to bring hope back into the world. And unfortunately, kind of gets taken away when he does die and Arthur Maxon takes over and makes them a bit more closer to the original ideology of the Brotherhood of Steel, which is like very xenophobic, very, we know what's best for you, so you better get in line.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'm a big fan of the Elder Lions Brotherhood.
Yeah, they're doing some good in the world, and I want to be a part of something like that. And the Institute, if they weren't just so comically stupid evil, that's kind of a place I would like to be. Of like, yeah, let's research things. Let's make the world a better place on a surface. But instead, they're wasting their time making synthetic gorillas when they could be, you know, spending time how to like changing radiation, being water purifying and stuff like that. So I can't in good conscience join them. If I had to pick, I would say Elder Lions Brotherhood, but I'd throw my hat into the Minutemen as well as an idealistic, you know, yeah, we're going to be there responding to help people in need kind of thing. So those are the two I would pick.
Yeah.
Okay. So as kind of a final question here for Fallout, in the series, we see multiple examples of the future imperfect trope. That's basically the idea that after enough time has passed, the people in that future have an incorrect view of the past or an incorrect view of like the customs and stuff of the past. So examples being that people in Diamond City who live in Fenway Park, have a very wrong view of what baseball is. They think of it as a full contact sport, you know, that is built on lethal intent. And we also have the Kings in New Vegas who see all this stuff about Elvis and see people calling him King. And this guy must have been like a god or something. That people worship. No one, they kept dressing like him. So they think that Elvis Presley was either like just this highly revered figure, which they're not entirely wrong, or he was like some god of some sort of the old world. And they kind of like try to bring that back. So all that to say, what does this say about our perception of history? And what can we do now to help future-proof our history so that those who look back at this time can see the truth as accurately as possible?
Nothing.
Writing this question, that's the exact answer I thought we were going to give, so I'm so happy. Explain yourself, please.
Yeah, well, there's been a lot of research into it, like Rosetta Stone type documents, things, carvings, etchings. It's something people think about, and it's something that's not easy to do, even without the total collapse of a civilization. You know, we've lost so much history already.
Yes.
From cultures who could write. And it's just, it's basically inevitable. Because we can document everything, we can put it on a storage device, and whoever finds it, there's no guarantee that they'd be able to read any of it. There's no guarantee it will survive. There's no guarantee that they'll have enough context to understand what we're saying. It's just not something we can guarantee.
As much as I hate to say it, I agree. It's with the technology we have. Sure, maybe we can find a way to preserve something on a disk or what have you that could survive for multiple years. But honestly, even the lower tech stuff like cuneiform tablets or hieroglyphics on a wall. Now, we kind of understand enough to get by on what they did, but we don't have everything. We have lost a lot to the sands of time. And some of that has to do with culture changing, with language changing, with information being wiped out because, you know, a Mongol horde came by or colonizers came by and destroyed everything around that area and suppressed information about the past. But there's no way that I can see to perfectly preserve the information we have now. All we can do is just hope for the best, try and put it down, have locations where we can put it away, keep it safe. I mean, we have stuff like the seed vault for our biological life forms and plants that if something were to happen, if something were to go extinct, maybe we could hopefully make more after some cataclysmic event, but there's no guarantee those are going to survive. What if something goes wrong with the systems there? They're probably not going to last that long by themselves. It's something not to bring like a downer on this whole conversation, but we just need to make sure that while we're here, we preserve what we can and talk to those around us because, hey, language is going to evolve over time. Culture is going to evolve, and we're going to stop caring about the things we did before. We're going to say that we weren't good when we were doing those things, when some of those things were perfectly fine. So just preserve what you can, and if someone tells you that baseball was a full contact sport where people tried to murder each other, well, as fun as that idea is, it's just not true.
Yeah. I mean, just think about how much of Egypt's culture alone that we lost.
Oof.
There, yes. Cleopatra is closer to this year than she was to when the pyramids were starting to be built.
That's a fact I've heard often, and I hate it every time someone says it, because it's true. It's astounding, like what we have lost along the way. And like even with stuff like scripture, there are letters written by Paul and other apostles that we don't have anymore because they weren't preserved. So could you imagine the knowledge we could have gleaned from the earlier church if those still survive? We are incredibly grateful to Providence that we have what we have here with 66 books in the Protestant canon that could easily have been more if God had allowed them to survive. It's an amazing thing, but we can't control the past. We can only control what we have. All right. You have anything else you want to add about Fallout before we head into our wrap-up, TJ?
Fallout Shelter might be the fifth best game in the franchise.
It's a mobile game for people who didn't know. All right. Now, how would you rate and review maybe the franchise as a whole or individual games, whichever you feel like doing?
Oh, no. I know what else we need to bring up. The Fallout show.
Oh, yeah. That is coming out soon.
Yeah.
What's the date?
I'm not sure, but so far, reviews aren't good.
Really? That's very disappointing.
Yeah, seems like they're going to go the Halo way instead of trying to think of another good show. I can't.
Yeah, as much as I hate myself, I've been watching the second season of Halo. It has gotten better for a given value of better. That does not mean it's good. So. Yeah. Let's hope for the best. Let's hope they don't Halo it up.
Yeah. But anyway.
All right.
Overall, 9 out of 10 easily.
Okay.
But, you know, there are things that drag it down.
Yeah. I wish Bethesda was better and stricter in their writing, tighter. They get a little too soft, and that's why I do prefer New Vegas with the good work that Obsidian does there. They're not to say they're perfect by any stretch of the imagination, even though I am going to give Fallout New Vegas a 10 out of 10. The franchise as a whole, I think 9 is a fair one to offer. 3, I'd probably give an 8, maybe a 7.5, depending on how I'm feeling that day. 4, I'd definitely give an 8.5. Do those numbers match up to what I said about 9? Probably not, but I'm going to say they do. So, guys, thank you for listening to another episode of Primarily Political as we go through these fandoms and see and investigate the politics within as this little brief series we're doing over time through Systematic Ecology. As well, we got to go to another question, TJ, one I've answered multiple times as well. What real life politician would enjoy your favorite movie / the next movie on your list, since you have answered this before?
No, I came up with better ideas.
Okay, go for it.
Of two politicians that I'm almost positive would like my favorite movie.
Okay.
Alexandra Ocasio-Cortez and Christian Sinema, mm-hmm, probably both like Treasure Planet.
Ooh. I mean, that's probably a good litmus test for people. If they don't like Treasure Planet, I mean, are they really your friend?
No. But, you know, I figured they're young
enough.
Possibly
be. Yeah.
They probably like it.
That makes sense. Yeah. Since I've answered this like 3-4 other times, I'm going to pick another favorite movie on my list. I'm going to go with Perfect Blue, and I'm going to be a little wacky with it again. I'm going to say we need to make Teddy Roosevelt a weeb, and we're going to start him off with Perfect Blue. We got to help him understand the idol situation in Japan and all the machinations of Satoshi Kon. He's going to love Perfect Blue after I'm done with him. So there's that. You guys have any opinions you want to throw out at us, let us know in the comments below, or message us on Facebook or Discord. We'd love to hear what you have to say on this stuff. As well, if you become a patron along the way, you get to vote on stuff like our All Reading Counts, where we are soon to be covering the novels that were selected, the novelettes that we just had a poll about. We'll be doing comic book series, graphic novels as well. If you want a say in that, head on over to Patreon, join up there at Systematic Geekology. We'd love to have you. So, TJ, do you have a recommendation for the audience to check out?
Everyone should watch Solo Leveling.
Okay.
If you like anime. If you like anime and you like isekai but you're tired of it, watch Solo Leveling. It's like the opposite of an isekai.
That's a fair assessment.
He brought the game into the
world. Pretty much. If you want to stay and you say, man, I really like New Vegas 2, but you need to see it in space, then I'm going to recommend you guys check out The Outer Worlds. Also done, same company, very similar things involved there. A ton of good fun. Not a perfect game by any stretch of the imagination, especially compared to New Vegas, but definitely worth your time if you want to head somewhere like that. So as we move on to the end here, do want to shout out some patrons real quick. Thank you guys for all you do. Aaron Hardy, Daniel Sigmund, Trip Fuller, who we just did the Galactica episode with, had a tremendously fun time with him, and James Barrett. You guys are the best. Thank you for helping to keep the lights on. But remember, we are all a chosen people, a geekdom of priests.
If you'd like to support our show on Captivate, feel free to go to captivate.fm and find our show, subscribe. You'll get access to any future online D&D campaigns over there. You'll get an extra bonus question for 4 to 8 times a month. You'll get extra content like that through there. You also get a one-time donation you could make to help support the show right on Captivate. So you don't get anything for the one-time donation, but if you would like to just support the show once, do a quick donation, you can do that through captivate.fm. Our overhead includes editing software, marketing, equipment, recording software, and a whole lot of other stuff. And we really appreciate everybody who can help keep the lights on.
If you love our show, you can follow the whole network in a single feed on Spotify at Anazara Ministry Podcast or the network page on Apple Podcasts. There you'll find shows like The Homely, The Whole Church Podcast, My Seminary Life, Let Nothing Move You, Dummy for Theology, The Bible After Hours, as well as mine and my husband's show, The Clies, where my husband Taylor and I go through weekly discussions in a devotional conversational method to help us all get closer to one another and God.